Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
In Faith Marino's story from our March-April 2024 issue, the women of the house band together to uncover the mysterious noises coming from the empty attic. Noises that the father seemingly can't hear. Please enjoy There's Nothing in the Attic, read by the author herself.
The first night, it was a kitchen chair set neatly on top of the polished walnut table, which the father had ordered from a luxury furniture dealer around the same time the nanny came to live with the family in the new gated tract home development, where the identical sameness of the terracotta tile roofs and blue lawns made walks through the neighborhood disorienting and panic-inducing, so that the nanny often had to use GPS to find her way home. The nanny was the first one up that morning, and thus the first to discover the chair on the table. The other chairs were neatly pushed in, no disorder in the room, as if the chair had simply floated itself onto the table, and it looked so silly that the nanny laughed and took it down before plugging in the Mr. Coffee and wiping the grounds off the quartz countertop. She and the father usually woke at the same time, and for the first month after the baby was born, they had an unspoken agreement that whoever went into the kitchen first had to make the coffee. But the nanny had noticed over the last few weeks that she was always the one who ended up in the kitchen first, just like she'd noticed that when she started taking out the trash, the father seemed to just stop taking it out. And now she made the coffee and took out the trash, even though she was only getting paid to take care of the baby. And even then, she'd only been hired to help in the mornings and evenings, leaving time in the afternoon to attend classes at the community college so she could get her associate's degree in child development and transfer in 2 years. But the father had asked her a week into the spring semester to drop her classes until the baby was sleeping through the night, which might be never. When the father came into the kitchen that morning in his ironed white shirt and tie, she said, "Good one," hooking a thumb at the table. He blinked and then laughed and said, "I try," in that way that he did when he was pretending to understand a joke. The next night, it was three loud knocks on the front door. The sister-in-law was the only one who heard it, and she ran down the gray, high-pile, carpeted stairs to the foyer, both of which were identical in every tract home in the development. She and her sister, the wife, had gone to enough open-house tours in the neighborhood to know that every house in the gated community had an identical layout: stained concrete foyer, stairs to the left, sitting room to the right, living room straight ahead, and kitchen capping the corner between them. She peered through the peephole in the door, but the patio was dark. She opened the door and whispered, "Hello?" into the night air, wondering if the teenage stepdaughter was pulling a prank on them, even though she wasn't the type to prank. The sprinklers across the street were running, and the wet sidewalk was haloed white under the fluorescent streetlights. The shadow of a cat slunk over the neighbor's fence, even though outdoor cats were a CCNR violation in the gated community. No one answered. Too jittery to go back to sleep, the sister-in-law went into the kitchen and prepped a batch of orange cream cinnamon rolls for breakfast, her own recipe and the father's favorite. The kitchen was quiet, so she played music on her phone while she kneaded and rolled the dough. But as she cut the log into discs, she thought she heard a tap-tap at the kitchen window. The third night, it was footsteps in the attic, slow and dragging, and the wife tried to get the father to go look, but he mumbled that he didn't hear anything and rolled away from her. So she put on her flip-flops, went out into the hallway, and pulled down the stepladder cord. She'd been hearing strange noises in the night ever since they'd moved into the house, right before she had the baby. Knocks on the walls, chairs scudding downstairs in the kitchen. But the father said it was just hormones, her body on alert for danger, an evolutionary adaptation to protect her and the baby from predators in those vulnerable first months. He'd watched a documentary on Neanderthals on the Discovery Channel. She was climbing the steps when the teenage stepdaughter's bedroom door opened. "Mom," she whispered, leaning out her door in the "Everyone Loves Someone Who's Had an Abortion" t-shirt that she slept in. Did you hear it too? 16, the same age the wife was when she gave birth to the stepdaughter. Go back to bed, the wife whispered as she climbed the steps. But the stepdaughter was there with her iPhone flashlight, and she passed it up to the wife as the sister-in-law and the nanny came out of their rooms, because they, too, had heard the footsteps in the attic. The wife shined the light around the dark, warm space, and she was surprised by how clean it was. No cobwebs, no dust, just blankets of pillowy insulation. There's nothing here, she said, and then looked down at the others. There's nothing in the attic. The next morning, the father laughed and shook his head as he poured the coffee that the nanny had made. Haunted, he said. The house is haunted? By who? Whom? The stepdaughter corrected. This house is brand new. No one died in this house, and it's not sitting on some old burial ground. He made a puffing sound as he added creamer to his coffee. How would the ghosts even know which house is which? There's something, the wife said as she misted the succulent leaves she was propagating in a Tupperware container on the counter. We all heard it last night. The father laughed and shook his head again. There's no such thing as ghosts. Still, the wife bought devotional candles and lit them around the house. The nanny used a small squeezy bottle of holy water to splash the doors and windows, while the sister-in-law hung her childhood rosaries and crucifixes on the walls. The wife lit a sage stick and wafted the smoke around the house until the nanny said it was cultural appropriation, and the wife put it out in a bowl of water. But the ghostly activity continued. They heard knocks on the walls, three sharp raps right above their heads as they were reading or cleaning or making dinner. Opened windows were closed and closed windows were opened. Doors were locked and unlocked. A vase of flowers was left balancing precariously on an Italian leather sofa cushion. And always, every night, they heard the sound of dragging footsteps in the attic. The stepdaughter brought out the Ouija board she'd been hiding in her closet since she was 13 and placed it on the bright, hand-carved mango wood coffee table. The women gathered around it and placed their fingertips on the edge of the planchette. "Spirit, we call on thee to reveal thyself," the stepdaughter said, eyes closed. "You can just talk normally," the wife said. "It works better this way." "How do you know?" the nanny asked. "Just okay? Can we just?" The stepdaughter cleared her throat and rolled her shoulders as she closed her eyes again. "Spirit, reveal thyself." The women waited in breathless silence, eyes closed. The air conditioner clicked on and the dog moaned as he stretched on the kitchen floor. And then the planchette began to drift, floating slowly across the board as the women spelled out the letters. H-E-L-L-O. "Nope," the nanny said, withdrawing her hands and standing. "I'm out." "You can't quit now," the sister-in-law said. "Nope," the nanny said, shaking imaginary dirt off her hands as she walked away. "I've seen this movie." She picked up the baby, who was having tummy time on a blanket on the floor, and carried him into the kitchen. "Let's just keep going without her," the wife said. They all closed their eyes again, and the stepdaughter cracked her neck. "Spirit, what is thy name?" Stillness. Silence. And then the planchette began to move, and the women spelled out the letters I-A-M. "Are you serious?" The father was standing in the foyer, sleeves rolled up to his elbows and suit jacket over his arm. "What are you doing?" The women stared, uncomprehending, until the stepdaughter said, "Communing with the spirits?" waving a hand at the Ouija board. "Obviously." "Where's the baby?" the father asked. "Right there," the wife said, pointing at the nanny and the baby at the kitchen table. A muscle twitched in the father's cheek. "Why aren't you watching him?" "He's right there," the wife said, pointing. The father moved swiftly into the sitting room and folded up the Ouija board. "No more of this. I don't want to hear any more bullshit about ghosts and haunted houses." He was sweating, pink-cheeked, his Dutch blood unable to handle the late summer heat, even though it stayed fairly mild in the valley. "It's not bullshit," the sister-in-law said as she tried to push the father's hands away. "Show me proof," the father said, picking up the Ouija board that was sticking half out of the box. "Show me scientific evidence for the existence of ghosts, and then you can have all the seances you want." So the women Googled ghosts, which led them to YouTube videos about multiverse bleed-throughs and the mysteries of consciousness, which led them to podcasts and audiobooks on Jungian philosophy and the collective unconscious, which led them to research articles on quantum mechanics and particle physics. The wife checked out library books on neutrinos, the subatomic ghost particles that have no mass or electrical charge and can pass through solid objects. The sister-in-law listened to audiobooks on string theory and space-time, while the nanny used the community college online library database to download and print articles from scientific journals about general relativity versus special relativity. The teenage stepdaughter watched YouTube videos on black holes and the light spectrum, and when the sister-in-law burst into the stepdaughter's room and said, "A spoon is a quantum of movement," the stepdaughter replied, "Color is the movement of light." The father woke in the morning to find the coffee made and the trash taken out, and the nanny reading so intently at the kitchen table that she didn't say hello to him when he came in. He poured his coffee, made his toast, fried his eggs, all the while watching the nanny to see when she'd notice him and say good morning. He sat across from her at the table, where she sat hunched over her book like she was trying to see through it, and he stared at her while he ate his breakfast. He put his dirty plate and coffee mug in the sink and lingered a moment in the doorway. But the nanny never looked up, so he left. Later that day, he came home from work to find the stepdaughter slicing ever smaller segments of a string in half with an X-Acto knife and a pair of tweezers at the kitchen counter, hair in her eyes and forehead jeweled with sweat. He poured himself a glass of water, waited for her to say hello, and when she didn't, he asked, "What are you doing with that string?" She replied without looking at him, "Seeing how many times I can cut it in half until it no longer exists." That evening, while the sister-in-law browned ground beef in a pan at the stove, she told the wife about matrix mechanics. Electrons disappear between jumps. In the split second when they move from one atom to another, they can't be located in time or space. She scraped the frozen brick of beef and flipped it, pressing it into the pan with the spatula. "They only exist when colliding with something else." That night, the father brushed his teeth and came to bed, where the wife was reading in her Oxnard Bulldogs t-shirt and boxers. And she looked up from her book on the curvature of space-time and said, eyes bright, "We're all living in a giant cosmic mollusk." The father froze at the edge of the bed with a semi because the wife wasn't wearing a bra and said, "The hell is a mollusk?" The wife's eyes dulled and she shook her head as she turned back to her book. The next morning, the coffee wasn't made, and the father came into the kitchen to find a wristwatch on the counter and another one on the floor. He bent to pick it up, but the nanny jumped from the kitchen chair she was reading in to shout, "Don't touch it!" "Why not?" "Because time is relative to distance, so by the end of the day, the watch on the floor should be slower than the watch on the counter," the nanny explained. "Also, can you take the trash out when you leave?" By fall, a whiteboard had gone up in the sitting room with diagrams and arrows and formulas written in red marker. ML plus M triangle X equals 0, along with several bullet points. Point: matrix mechanics. Between jumps, electrons disappear equals cease to exist? Question mark? Equals only exist in collision. Point: one electron theory, zags backward in time equals positron equals antimatter equals time-reversed matter. Point: all bodies attract other bodies, equals curvature of space-time. The knocks on the walls continued. Even the father heard them now. Unmistakably intentional. Three quick raps, someone knocking on a door. But he pretended not to notice, and he didn't meet the wife's eyes when she heard the knocks and looked at him across the room. The wife started batting his exploring hand away at night, and he told his business partner over golf that she wasn't acting like herself. She was remote, distant. "And there's a live-in nanny?" the business partner asked. "A baby always puts stress on a marriage, and the wife usually changes and becomes distant, but usually it's because she's tired and stressed out. But if she's got a nanny helping her..." "And her sister and daughter," the father added. The business partner had warned him about the pressures that a baby could put on a marriage, which was why the father had insisted on hiring the nanny in the first place. The business partner made a face. "Four women and one baby? She can't be that tired." The business partner had married his college girlfriend and now had a 4-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son. The father was the only one who knew that the business partner had slept with a woman he met in a bar in Denver last spring when they went to Colorado to bid on a job. He knew because he found the business partner squatting in the hotel hallway outside his door in his boxers and undershirt, sobbing and snotting into his hands the next morning, crying as hard as he did the night he found out his wife had gone into labor 7 weeks early with their son while he was in Miami and he knew it would be at least 2 days until he could get home to her. "You need to take her out for a date night," the business partner yelled over the wind as he steered their golf cart to the next hole. "Make her feel like something other than a mom for the night." So that night, the father took the wife out to the same restaurant where they'd met when she was a bartender, because he knew she liked seeing her old friends there. The bartender that night was the same woman who'd called in sick the night the father came in and met the wife, who was covering her shift. The wife ran behind the bar and hugged her. The father swirled his greyhound and watched them catch up, imagining what would have happened if the other woman had been tending the bar when he came in that night. If he would have fallen in love and married her instead of the wife. The thought made him uneasy. The wife and the other woman looked so similar, he could imagine himself getting drunk and not being able to tell the difference between the two, which made him wonder how easy it would be to cheat like the business partner did. He looked away when they both laughed too loudly, tucking their chins so that their necks waddled in a way he'd always found unattractive. When the wife came back to the table, he said, "I'm ready to order if you are." He ordered a steak with a baked potato and gravy while the wife ordered a plate of French fries, switchback style. And when the father asked what that meant, she waved a hand and said, "I used to double fry my fries when my shift was over. I'd switch them back and forth from the flour mixture to the frying oil, so now everyone here calls it switchback style." "You're only going to eat French fries? You should at least have a vegetable or something." "Potatoes are vegetables." He didn't like hearing her old work stories and seeing her in this context. A restaurant worker, a person who ate a plate of French fries on its own like she'd just worked a late shift. And he decided before their food arrived that he wouldn't bring her back here again. "So, tell me the latest," he said after several minutes of silence. As if anticipating the question, the wife sipped her Coke and said, "Well, Matrix Mechanics is more plausible, but I'm really drawn to the one electron universe, and I don't think both can be true at the same time. But then lots of things in quantum mechanics and particle physics manage to be true, even when they contradict each other." The father blinked, swallowed his steak thickly. "What?" She swept the tabletop clear with both hands. "Unlike other particles, every electron is identical." She lined up identical Splenda packets on the table between them. "The one electron universe theory asks the question, what if they're actually all the same electron?" She swept all but one Splenda packet away with her hand. "What if the entire universe is made up of only one electron moving rapidly back and forth through time, zigzagging so fast it seems to make a picture, but we can only see one half of the easel, so we can only see one side of the picture?" She put the condiments tray in between them and zigzagged the remaining Splenda packet from side to side on the table so that the father could only see the left zags that she made. "But," the hand on the Splenda packet froze. "Time-reversed matter is antimatter, which means we're not really here. It's all an illusion." Smiling, as she tossed the Splenda packet over her shoulder so that it landed on the floor behind her. The father felt the steak lodge in his throat and he sipped his water to try to move it. He waited a breathless, terrifying 6 seconds before feeling the wedge of steak loosen and pass. "Isn't that beautiful?" the wife asked. "That you and me and the table and chairs... everyone in this restaurant could all be made up of the same single electron, that we're all part of the same body?" "The same body?" the father asked, eyes watering. The wife put her hand on his because, he realized, she thought he was crying. "The same illusion of a body," she said, smiling. The father motioned for the waiter and asked for the check. The next day, the father microwaved a Costco teriyaki bowl for himself after work because the sister-in-law had forgotten to make dinner. And he sat at the table to find the wife, the nanny, the sister-in-law, and the stepdaughter out on the Kentucky bluegrass lawn in the backyard at sunset. They were gathered around the baby's swing, which had been tied to the lowest branch of the oak tree that had already dropped its leaves for winter. The stepdaughter climbed a step stool ladder until she was parallel with the branch, and then the nanny passed the baby in the swing to her. The stepdaughter held the swing for a moment while the other women timed their watches, and then she released it. The baby, now 6 months old, screamed with joy as he swung down and then up again, this time only half the distance of the rope to the branch. The women waited until the swing stopped moving before they released their timers and then cheered at their successful experiment. The father came home from work the next day to find the sister-in-law taking out the trash and the wife in the kitchen making a tuna melt sandwich that she put on a plate and carried to the nanny, who was reclining on the couch watching TV. The nanny took a bite and said, "A little bit of mustard next time?" "I thought so too," the wife said. The father fired the nanny. He put her suitcase in the trunk and drove her to her mother's house himself. He said he would mail her a check for the last 2 weeks' pay, but they both knew he wouldn't. And when he came home, the wife, the sister-in-law, and the teenage stepdaughter were all waiting in the foyer, staring at him not with hatred or anger, but rather with a hardness, a resignation. "I'm not going to pay someone to sit around watching TV and getting spoon-fed," the father said, louder than he'd intended. He was prepared for one of them to snap back that they were surprised he paid her at all. They knew he'd refused to pay the contractor he'd hired to update his parents' house after they died, citing shoddy workmanship, before selling the house for a profit. He paid for a trip to Hawaii for the whole family with the money he refused to pay the landscapers, who he accused of cutting corners to pocket the extra cash. He could admit what the others in the house couldn't, that this was how they were able to live the life they had, in a new tract home in the San Fernando Valley, with a pool that overlooked the valley beyond, in a neighborhood with a gate and guard shack, good schools, shopping centers, grocery stores stocked with organic fair trade products, restaurants that served everything so families didn't have to argue about where to eat. But to his surprise, the wife, the sister-in-law, and the stepdaughter didn't say anything. They turned and walked away, the sister-in-law going out to the backyard to sit in a lounge chair by the covered pool, while the stepdaughter went upstairs to her room, and the wife went to the living room to lie on the floor with the baby. The sister-in-law stopped talking to the father and made dinner that she served the wife and stepdaughter before he got home. There was always enough left over for him, but he knew that there was an insult in it anyway. And then one Friday afternoon, he found her carrying the baby through the backyard, whispering to him, "All one electron." He told the sister-in-law it was time for her to move out. "You've been here for almost a year. It's time to get your own place," the father said. "This weekend. Right now." "I'm working this weekend," she said. The father knew that the sister-in-law had rearranged her schedule so that she could help with the baby in the afternoon and make dinner at night, but he was too angry to give it any more thought. "Now. This weekend. Out," he said. The sister-in-law was gone by Sunday. The wife and the stepdaughter whispered in corners and doorways, flashing out of sight when the father appeared. Neither would look him in the eye, and the wife started sleeping on a yoga mat in the nursery because she said that the baby was going through a sleep regression, but the father never heard him crying. The wife started bartending again, picking up shifts after the stepdaughter got home from school to take care of the baby. "No," the father said when he found the wife putting on her restaurant uniform in the bedroom while the stepdaughter waited in the hallway with the baby. "No bartending. You're a mother." "I can be a mother and a bartender," the wife said. "You need to be home with the baby." "I am home with the baby. All day," the wife said, putting in her earrings. She walked out and took the baby from the stepdaughter, who whispered, "He's a black hole," staring at him, knowing he could hear her. So the father got off work early to pick up the stepdaughter from school with a duffel bag of her things. He drove her an hour and a half south to drop her at her grandparents' double wide in Riverside, but not before taking her phone, which was on the family plan he paid for, which meant it was actually his phone. When he got home and told the wife, she wept. She begged the father to let the stepdaughter come home at least to finish out the school year. She promised to quit her job, but he said, "Prove it. Prove that you love me." The wife knew that the father was ruthless, determined, single-minded. His anger sometimes showed itself in ways that scared her, like when the landscaping foreman showed up at the house demanding his money and the father said, "What'll happen to your company if I make a call to ICE?" And she knew he would. He would break up a dozen families if it meant winning. Once someone had become his enemy, he showed no mercy. She tried to be good, but everything she did enraged him. She set a watch on the floor and another one on top of the bookcase, and the father snatched them up and said, "Enough of this." He took the baby swing off the oak branch so that the wife would stop her pendulum experiments. They heard a knock, knock, knock one night from the garage door while they were sitting on the couch watching TV, and the father pretended not to hear it. "You heard it," the wife said. "I didn't hear anything," the father said. "The garage." So the father stood and went to the door, opening it and shining his phone flashlight inside the dark garage. "See? Nothing." "The observer effect," the wife said. "What?" "When you shine a light on an unlit object, you change it. The photons bounce it in a new direction, she explained. By looking for the ghost, you change the ghost's location. Jesus, enough with the ghosts, the father yelled, and slammed the garage door hard enough to rattle the wall and wake the baby. When the knock, knock, knock came from the ceiling directly over their bed that night, they both sat up and looked at one another, wild-eyed. You heard it, the wife said. I didn't hear anything, the father said. You heard it, the wife insisted. From the attic. There's nothing in the attic, the father said. The wife opened her mouth to speak, and the father grabbed her by the throat. Not to hurt her, not to crush out her breath, simply to silence her. He wanted her to stop speaking. He wanted things to go back to the way they were before. He wanted the wife he had before. He only let go when a thunderous boom came from the ceiling, and he and the wife both gasped. The wife was shaking. The father exhaled slowly and lay down. Go back to sleep, he said, rolling away from her. The wife stopped eating. She stopped cooking and cleaning. She bumped into walls and tables because she no longer saw them. She drifted through the house with the baby during the day, and at night she floated through the empty rooms and whispered to him. The father once heard her say, time accelerates in a black hole. He followed her from room to room, but every time he turned on the light, she seemed to jump to a different room. He followed her to the kitchen, watched her turn on the faucet in the dark, and when he turned on the light, she was gone, faucet still running. She reappeared in the hallway and drifted into the bathroom, and when he ran after her and turned on the bathroom light, she vanished. The baby monitor crackled on the kitchen counter. She was upstairs, whispering to the baby. He turned the volume on the monitor to max and put it to his ear to hear her whisper through the static. All one electron. The father did what he did as a last resort. He didn't want to do it. He didn't want to lock her in the attic, but she gave him no choice. He was out of options. She didn't even seem to notice as he guided her up the ladder, pushing her butt from behind. She didn't yell or weep, didn't try to push back or fight her way out. She just sat in the chair he left for her and watched as he closed the door and nailed it shut. The wife knew something about luck. A high school dropout with a baby at 16, the only reason she was in this attic, in this 3,000-square-foot house, in a development of identical 3,000-square-foot homes, was because she happened to cover a bartending shift for a sick coworker the night that the father came into the restaurant. He'd come in a few times before, his hair slightly disheveled in a careful, attentive way, and he'd flirted with the other bartender. He was 4 tequila shots in before she understood that he thought she was the other bartender. He stayed until her shift ended, and she called him a cab. He took her hand, eyes swimming, and said, "Can I show you my house?" She said yes and clocked out. She was young and pretty. He was ready to settle down and start a family. When the father refused to pay the contractors and landscapers and pool cleaners and merry maids, she pretended not to see. When he met her eye, challenging her to push back and tell him that it was wrong so that he could tell her she was naive and this was the way of the world, she looked away. And as she climbed the ladder, with the father pushing from behind, as the door was nailed shut, she knew that she'd chosen the attic, that she'd always been in the attic. The father knew the importance of narrative continuity, how important it was to keep the story of a house consistent, how everything could fall apart when enough light showed between the rafters and the joists. So he showered, brushed his teeth, ironed his shirt, dabbed cologne under his jaw, buckled the baby into the car seat, and went back to the restaurant to find the other bartender. After several days of being alone in the dark, warm, windowless room, the wife realized she was disappearing. If she didn't move, if she stayed perfectly still, she could no longer feel the floor or the walls. She couldn't tell where her body ended and the house began. She was floating up to the rafters. She was sinking through the floor. She started pacing, slowly, back and forth across the attic, feet heavy and dragging because she didn't know where they were, back and forth. She crawled into the walls and knocked on them to locate herself in time and space. She became a pendulum, measuring the house's heartbeats as she moved backward and forward through time. And after a while, she couldn't be sure she was still in her own house, or if she was haunting someone else's home. She realized that it wasn't her knocking on the walls, but a different ghost in a different house. She realized that she could come and go as she wanted. She liked going back to the moment of the Ouija board, seeing how far she could get before the father interrupted. She opened windows and locked doors, stroked her daughter's hair, tickled her baby's chin. She put chairs on top of tables and vases on couch cushions, because she knew how much it truly frightened the father, how she could unmake him with a single hard blow to the ceiling right above his head. The father never stopped hearing her footsteps in the attic, and one night he pried out the nails and pulled open the door to peer inside. The attic was empty, but he knew the wife wasn't gone. She'd just become antimatter. And later, when the new wife woke up in the night and whispered, "Did you hear that? It sounded like footsteps in the attic." The father wasn't actually lying when he said, "There's nothing in the attic."
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.